And good morning. Hello, this is Dr. Roy Morgan. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. I can tell you right now, folks, I got up way too early this morning, and it's not anybody's fault but mine. I just started thinking. I thought about, what about cholesterol? What about cholesterol? What is cholesterol? Is it bad? Is it evil? Anyway, I realize this topic is... You're just going to have to take some of what I'm saying with a grain of salt, because obviously I'm biased about this. I'm biased toward the fact that I don't want people to die from horrible side effects. I'm biased in that it's really fun to have people feel good and function at a high level. I'm biased in that I don't want grandparents dying prematurely. It's their job to train the grandkids, right? And spoil them and other stuff. Anyway, I could keep going on and on that. There may be just a tad bit of sarcasm in that, but you understand the point I'm getting to. So, you know, I'm always interested in reading research, and kind of ask myself a lot of questions. You know, is this actual factual, or is it true? Is it false? Is it actually a lie? Anyway, let's go backwards in time for just a moment. Paul and Silas were on a missionary journey. And they were doing their very best to proclaim the gospel accurately. However, it said that the Bereans were more noble than those in Thessalonica because they studied the scriptures daily to see if what the apostles were saying was true. And I kind of think to myself when I remind myself of that information that they're questioning Paul. Talk about the quintessential apostle. Fabulous. We should imitate him, especially the good parts. Anyway, so it's okay to question things. And I would say that medical science or science is far from the gospel. It's not. There's nothing written in stone. And I think that people are walking around so terrified of dying of high cholesterol, they don't even know how to live their lives anymore. Anyway, came across a little bit of research that I find interesting, and since I'm in charge of driving this bus, I guess I can read it to you. Back in February 2015, two brave medical investigators published a damning analysis of the science behind statin cholesterol-lowering drugs. And I think their point was how statistical deception created the appearance that statins are safe and effective in primary and secondary prevention of cardiovascular disease. That comes from Expert Reviews Clinical Pharmacology. And with a title like that, how could that be wrong? Expert Reviews. I guess they're the experts. That comes from March 8th, 2015. They claim, these two brave medical investigators, that the current use of statin drugs is based upon scientific deceit. I don't know if you know what the word deceit means, but they're basically saying liars. Okay. The analysis stands in the face of 25 million Americans who have been duped by the medical establishment to take ineffective, problematic, and a liver toxic drug called a statin. But what alternatives does modern medicine have to prevent heart attacks beyond aspirin tablets, which are also problematic? And in parentheses it says, because they definitely cause bleeding ulcers and brain hemorrhages. That's where your brain has a split or a crack in a blood vessel and it leaks into the brain tissue. Not good. They are also ineffective. An 81 milligram baby aspirin does not prevent blood clots in coronary arteries, which is a major reason why people die. And that comes from the American Journal of Medicine, 2010. Look it up for yourself. The University of South Florida, this is a different article, the professional home of one of the main statin investigators, issued a press release summarizing the scathing report, which was widely disseminated, mostly by low-trafficked online sources of medical information, February 20th, 2015, from Eureka Alert. Of course, I don't remember this being covered by any major news media sources. All right, here's the punchline. There were two particularly brave investigators. I just referenced them a while ago. One is Dr. David Diamond. He's writing from the J. A. Haley Veterans Hospital in the University of South Florida. That's one source. Along with Oof Ravnaskov. I hope I said Dr. Ravnaskov's name correct. He's from Sweden. And he had early written in the British Medical Journal that there was no scientific support linking dietary saturated fat to coronary heart disease. That came from the British Medical Journal, 2012. How dare he write that fat's not bad for you? Anyway, that would be one X against him, depending on which side of the equation or the coin you're looking from, right? So how dare these two do-gooders attempt to upset the medical dogma that saturated fat's not all that bad, and now they're going to do it again by saying cholesterol drugs really don't work as they're claimed to work? All right, let me go ahead and read this to you, and I'll make it real quick. A review of Dr. Diamond's and Ravnaskov's paper by Dr. Alan Magaziner of the Center for Wellness in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, was titled End of Statins. Well, it's not quite the end of statins. The forces behind statin drugs have dug in their heels. They've broadened the guidelines that call for millions more Americans to take statin drugs. And they have, of course, defended statin drug use without adequate scientific substantiation. All that need to happen is for Medicare and private insurance to half the payments for statin drugs, and the argument would be over. How many Americans would continue to pay for statin drugs when it would cost them out of pocket? Are you kidding me? That's like the newest information on Obamacare. They're saying now this is the lowest level of participation that there has ever been. I realize it's only a few years, you know, what, four, five, something like that. And they're saying, we just don't understand this. People are making their initial payment when they sign up. People are signing up, but they're not making payments every month. That's because people don't have the money. So Dr. Magaziner is saying, if people had to pay out of pocket for statin drugs, would they actually take them? Okay. So statin drug advocates continue to describe statins as miracle drugs. You know what can I just tell you what I hear over and over from people? People tell me, my doctor says if I don't take a statin drug, I'm going to die. Or they ask another question, you want to have a blood clot? You want to have a heart attack? And so that's about as much information in the form of a guilt-ridden question as I get out of people. I don't think I've ever once heard of a physician explaining what cholesterol is and how it affects the body. Not in totality. Anyway, I'm just going to give you some of the highlights from Dr. Diamond's and Dr. Ravnaskov's report. He's the world-famous researcher from Sweden. How about that? Here's some of the facts that they came up with by looking all the statin studies. Number one, I know, you've already heard this before. They say that, number one, cholesterol reduction may actually have a very deleterious consequence. Do you know what the word deleterious means? Let's just say in this setting it means really bad consequences. How about that? They go on to write that cholesterol is essential for cell metabolism. That means everything that your cell has to do to keep itself healthy and to keep it in good working order and to make sure it can do what God designed it to do, guess what? It's got to have cholesterol. And low cholesterol increases the risk for cancer and mental problems. I don't know if you've ever heard that before, but it almost terrifies me if someone is taking some type of psychotropic medication, whether it be Geodon or Effexor or Wellbutrin, I mean, the list goes on, and the doctor all of a sudden decides the new focus needs to be on lowering cholesterol. Anyway, pretty dangerous if you ask me. Lipoproteins, well, these are cholesterol particles. So like if the doctor does a cholesterol profile on you and it measures HDL, that's high density lipoprotein. And low density lipoprotein, which is quite often called the bad cholesterol. But guess one thing that LDL does? Maybe it's not so bad after all. It's been shown that one of its primary roles in the human body is to bind to and inactivate various pathogenic microorganisms. Mm-hmm. You mean LDL cholesterol could actually go up if the body's attempting to absorb toxins from a toxic parasite or fungus or virus or bacteria? Yeah. So what happens if you lower it? Well, here's the result. Low cholesterol increases the incidence of viral infections. Raise your hand if you want to have more viral infections. I didn't see one hand go up. Number two, the lack of a link between arterial disease, which is really how this is all touted, folks, and cholesterol was originally described in 1936 and confirmed numerous times since then. But since 1936, they're saying, we can't find a link between cholesterol levels and arterial disease. Number three, the major deception has been to measure the effectiveness of statin drugs in relative terms, maybe lowering cholesterol, but the side effects in hard numbers. All right, here's the stats right here. To me, this is kind of interesting, so just bear with me. The chance of suffering a heart attack over 5 years without treatment of cholesterol drugs is 2%. You have a 2% risk. Statin drug users reduce that risk to 1%. So drug companies, they use the hard numbers. That means in hard numbers, you and I would say, well, that's just a 1% improvement. And that'd be true. That's not the way that drug companies use that information. They say the improvement is in relative numbers. That means if you go from 2% down to 1%, that's a 50% reduction. And that's the way they do this, folks. Most statin drug users will never have a heart attack, and they'll never benefit from taking the drug. While the preventative effects of statin drugs are magnified by the use of relative numbers, that means not hard numbers that you and I, if you had a checking account that paid you 25%, you know, interest on your money, you'd be really happy about that. But if we use relative numbers, yeah, we're not going to get there. All right. For example, in one study, statin drugs increased the risk for diabetes by 0.6%. That means it went from 2.4% to 3%. But if we use relative numbers, that'd be a 25% relative increase in diabetes. No, they didn't want to talk about that. And of course, this article I'm looking at here is probably 4 years old. I can tell you right now, the latest up-to-date scientific information is showing, guess what you have great odds of developing if you take a statin drug. That's right, diabetes. You know how many times I've asked that question to people that with type 2 diabetes? Here's a question. Did you have diabetes before you took Lipitor? And they say, no, Dr. Morgan, I did not. So what you're saying is, you took the Lipitor first and then you develop a diabetes. Yes, that's correct. Okay, that's just one question. Another study showed 11% of a group taking statin drugs develop cancer versus only 7.5% that took an inactive placebo pill. Now, in hard numbers, that's a 3.5% difference, but in relative numbers, that's a 46% increase. I don't know if you got that, but taking a statin drug is a 46% increase in cancer. Now, this is interesting to me. I'm telling you, this is a little bit scary to me. Here's another study. 4.2% of female statin drug users develop breast cancer versus only 0.34% taking a placebo. Did you get those numbers? So if you use a hard number, that's just a 3.86% difference in hard numbers, but that means it's 12.3 times more breast cancer in women that take statin drugs compared to those that don't. That's like a 1,235% increase. Woo! All right, point number four from Dr. Diamond. Almost all of the heart attacks prevented by statin drugs are non-mortal. Now, this may not be like a big point to you, but to me, it's pretty significant. I don't know if you know that most sudden death heart attacks are caused by electrical storms in the heart, not by cholesterol. You know, kind of like somebody has a seizure where they can't control themselves. Have y'all heard of any politicians, you know, having seizures lately? I haven't. Or maybe I have. Point number five. While it is said that only 1% of statin drug users report muscle damage, many patients discontinue taking statins for this reason and are never counted when it comes to publishing information about side effects and studies. Furthermore, the Food and Drug Administration divides and tabulates muscular symptoms, which are common among statin users, into 11 categories, which are only recognized as a major problem when they're combined. Really? You got to break it down into 11 categories? Can't we just have one category, as in muscles hurt? Point number six. I'm telling you, I can't make this stuff up. Now, this right here I find very interesting. So what I want you to do is I want you to think about the present world that we're living in. Think about everything that's going on. Think about things that make you really happy and peaceful. Then I want you to think about things that you might be a little bit cautious about or might make you a little bit nervous, or you might, you know, shake your head and say, I just never thought I'd see times like this. Okay, here's point number six from Dr. Raznikov and Diamond. They say that low cholesterol is observed. That means they just see this over and over and over again among individuals with violent behavior, and is also a biological marker for major mental depression and suicidal behavior. Folks, I've done this long enough to know that I am just terrified if a physician prescribes a cholesterol-lowering drug for someone that has severe depression or has suicidal thoughts. That is absolutely nuts. So among a... Oh, man, get this right here. Woo, this is a good study. Among a study of 143 statin drug users with memory loss or mental problems, that's the two, there we go, there's the two things you're looking at. If you've got pretty bad memory loss after you've taken the, you know, Zocor, Lipitor, or Crestor, or if you have mental problems, I don't know, what's your definition of a mental problem? I think you probably have a very clear idea of what those issues would be. Here's the punchline. 90% of them improved with statin discontinuation. Did you get that? 90% improvement? If you have memory loss and you have mental problems, 90% improvement when you discontinued the drugs? Woohoo! Oh, my word. Have you ever heard that before? It's pretty impressive, if you ask me. Okay. Number seven. And they're just looking at the basic information here. It said nerve problems are rampant among statin drug users. You're probably saying, Dr. Morgan, you're probably going overboard. What's a nerve problem? Well, have you ever heard of neuropathy? Tingling in your feet, burning, numbness, constant discomfort, driving you crazy, nerves that go numb in the body. No. You know, if the tables were turned and you said, Dr. Morgan, I'd like to give you... neuropathy? Well, my word, I would not like that. That's point number seven for Dr. Diamond Raznikov. Nerve problems are rampant among statin drug users. 16 times higher among statin drug users than non-users. Folks, what do you think that means? Does that mean it's just a little bit poisonous to the human body? Okay. Number eight, the major collaboration of statin drug treatment researchers is located in at Oxford University, which coincidentally receives millions of dollars from pharmaceutical companies. This comes from Expert Reviews, Clinical Pharmacology, March 8, 2015. Doctors Diamond and Raznikov write, if the pharmaceutical industry continues to expand its control over medical education research and the news media, then 5 years from now, most adults as well as children with elevated cholesterol will be on a statin. You know what? I don't think I'm cynical, but I bet you that could be true. Basically, every human being that walks into a doctor's office needs to be on an expensive statin, according to some people. Okay, who's going to stand up to these bullies? Well, you got to listen to this right here. This just drives me crazy. Okay. When the British Medical Journal did, in fact, publish a report showing the side effect rate for statin drugs, and this is what they published. And, of course, the British Medical Journal is a very prestigious journal, but they published that the side effects of taking statin drugs, that means you got problems when you take them. Let's just say it's muscle pain for one of them. They published that there's an 18% side effect rate with a benefit ratio of 1%. That means 18% of people that take them have serious problems, and I can't even make this up. The benefit ratio is 1%. So there's a Professor Rory Collins. He is a longtime statin drug advocate. Professor Rory Collins. He demanded that the journal retract that report. It goes on to say that because he's for statins. Anyway, here's what happened. The British Medical Journal did correct the report to be more precise. You know how they published it? The side effect rate was at 18%. So they corrected that, and they said what the actual number was. They said the side effect rate was actually 17.4%, to be specific. So that's just ridiculous, isn't it? Anyway, Professor Collins, the guy that's for statins, is the head of a university group that refuses to release all the raw data on statin drug trials for review. That's what you call transparency, isn't it? Anyway, what's a person to do? What are we supposed to do? What do you recommend? I'm going to read something else to you here. To me, this is, I hope this answers some questions for you. Now, of course, I realize I'm just giving you information here. You're very intelligent. It's good to question things. You can question me. You can say, Dr. Morgan, are you actually correct on this or are you wrong? It's fine with me if you do that. But here goes. The title of this article, and I got it from Shane Ellison. He's a pharmacist, I believe. Okay. The title of the article is Cholesterol or High Blood Sugar is the Cause of a Heart Attack? All right. In 2004, Time magazine told the world there's just one problem with its cholesterol hypothesis. And I quote, "Sometimes it's just dead wrong. More than half of all people who suffer from heart attacks have low cholesterol. If I'm not mistaken, the number is exactly two-thirds. Two-thirds of all heart attacks are when total cholesterol is below 180. Now, does that fit the narrative that we're being told? And high cholesterol, and they call high cholesterol somewhere between 300 and 350. It is a natural and healthy part of aging, according to this article. The higher their total blood cholesterol, the longer people live. Have you heard that before? I know you've heard that if you listen to me. I say that like all the time. Do I ever sound like a broken record? Targeting this natural phenomenon of people that live a long time when their cholesterol is high, drug companies, they have tried to convince people otherwise while profiting immensely. Now, you know as well as I do, people don't change their story when money's involved, or do they? If fat and cholesterol were the culprit in heart disease due to their ability to kind of like plug the pipes or clog you up, then these ubiquitous substances, meaning cholesterol and fat, they would clog the entire 100,000 miles of your arteries and veins that make up a human body. Instead, 90% of the time, heart disease is caused by the narrowing of just those small coronary arteries, the ones that are just feeding the heart itself. which means the rest of the cardiovascular system remains perfectly healthy despite being very rich in cholesterol and fat. That's an interesting thing to think about, isn't it? This common sense observation renders the cholesterol and fat theory of heart disease obsolete. If you want to avoid feeling like an elephant is crushing your chest, you might want to look beyond cholesterol. Coronary arteries bear little resemblance to your kitchen pipes. Instead, they are made up of muscle sandwiched between two structural layers. When the muscle of arteries becomes inflamed, atherosclerosis or heart disease can set in. This is initiated by damage to the innermost structural layer that faces the bloodstream. It's called the endothelium. And of course, science has made great strides in identifying what causes damage to this layer. Aside from smoke and cigarettes, the biggest culprit in today's heart attack pandemic is high blood sugar, which can come from frequent consumption of refined sugars, or if you want to call them refined carbohydrates, or bleached flour, because all that stuff converts into sugar very easily. It leads to a condition known as insulin resistance, or early type 2 diabetes. Insulin resistance causes blood sugar to float in the blood longer than it should. Muscle no longer vacuums it from the bloodstream. Over time, blood sugar reacts with amino acids floating nearby, and the result of this reaction is a sharp knife termed advanced glycation end products, or AGEs. It's like a shard of glass, buddy. AGE products cut deeply into the structural layer of coronary arteries. Medically, this is called glycation, and explains why diabetics have four times the risk of heart attack relative to non-diabetics. Didn't I just read earlier that the studies show conclusively that when you take statin drugs, you actually increase the development and the risk of developing diabetes? Yeah. Overcome with high blood sugar, they face debilitating process of advanced glycation end products. It makes the arteries hard and stiff. You see, coronary arteries are most susceptible to advanced glycation end products due to the mechanical stress in the region of the heartbeat. As the heart beats, the structural layer, which is made up of collagen and elastin, it becomes sensitive to them. Arteries are not subject to mechanical stress and do not expose the structural layer as readily. Therefore, they are not as sensitive to AGEs like maybe the carotids are, or the coronary vessels. Damage caused by AGE products leads to supple, healthy coronary arteries becoming rigid. So you go from supple, spry, flexible, bendable, movable, soft blood vessels that are designed to handle stress, they become hard as a rock. They become rigid. And that's the same thing that can happen to your skin. This is what the name atherosclerosis was derived from. The term combines two Greek words, athere, which means gruel, I'll let you think about that, and sclerosis means hardening. So it's hardening of the gruel. I can't make it up, that's really true. The damage causes the body's natural repair mechanism to take over, and the inflammation cascade begins. This is just an age-old immune defense mechanism. Now, what does your body do? It uses cholesterol as a band-aid to repair it, much like if you cut yourself on your skin, a scab would form. Or would you rather a scab not form so you can have a staph infection? Of course not. All right. I'm looking at a chart. I think I've copied this chart about 10 times this week. And it says insulin counts are the most commonly consumed foods, healthy and otherwise, in the standard American diet. And I'll just give you a few of them. All right. If you eat, here we go, an avocado, the quantity is 1/4 of an avocado, not a whole avocado, but they give it an insulin count of the number 2. All right? And maybe what this is referring to is the amount of insulin that's required to help process the avocado. And so what I'm suggesting to you is, it's been shown that the higher your insulin levels, the more problems you're going to have. All right. So if you eat a whole avocado, that would be 2 times 4, that would be an insulin count of 8. All right, that's a relative number. What if you eat a pancake, just one? That has an insulin count of 83. What if you had a low-fat blueberry muffin, which I know you know this, but if they take the fat out of a blueberry muffin to keep the thing from tasting like a block of sawdust or styrofoam or cardboard, they have to add a boatload of sugar to it. So what's the insulin count on a blueberry muffin? 116. 2 eggs, 2 large eggs, they have an insulin count of 14. You tell me, what's better? A high insulin count of 116, or would you like just 14? Low-fat fruit yogurt. Won't we just call that a Yoplait yogurt? 57. That's way high. But you know, there's one thing on this list that I find extremely fascinating. For example, cauliflower, a cup of cauliflower has a count of 10. Broccoli has a count of 4. If you had a cup of blueberries, that's 3. So you can tell right now there's just not a whole lot of insulin that's used to process those, right? How about a tablespoon of olive oil that has a count of 2? How about a fourth of a cup of walnuts. You can tell I go to Walmart sometimes. Anyway, so, but it's very low. It just puts very little stress. But get this right here. Leafy green vegetables, they're the only thing on the list that has a count of 0. I mean, this, folks, this is incredible. Now, I realize I just looked at the clock. I've been talking for 32 minutes, so that's, I went way longer than what I should have. Please forgive me. But can I give you just a quick idea? You ever heard of vitamin D, K2, magnesium, IP6, resveratrol, vitamin C? There's your solution right there in doing these low insulin foods. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, my friend. How are you this morning?
Good. Are you a first-time caller, sir?
First time this morning.
Okay, go ahead.
You know, I was awakened yesterday morning with bad mouth pain, upper gum above the tooth line, and it has not gone away.
Well, what do you think's under that gum line above the tooth?
I don't know.
I
was sleeping on the wrong, I felt like I was sleeping hard on that side of the head, on the right side of
my
head.
Well, I mean, all that's a possibility. Correct. You know what a probe is? I'm sorry. A dentist will use a device called a probe where he might actually push into the edge of the gum line.
Right.
To see if it's inflamed or red or there's a pocket. That's really what I meant. So sometimes even at the local stores, they'll sell these little dental probes.
Right.
But you might push in there and see if that area is just real tender. So we're just trying to distinguish.
I rub my finger up in that area, it actually makes it feel better, but it just won't go away.
Well, you know, there's several techniques that we can just go through and we can try and see if it gives you closure. But I would say, and of course, I haven't examined this area. You know what? In my pickup, I have a very powerful flashlight. I'm sure I could see it really well if you opened your mouth wide enough, but since you're not here, I can't do that.
I could meet you in an hour.
Just only an hour?
I could meet you in an hour.
Well, I tell you what, if you'll follow me while I'm mowing the grass this morning, I'll be glad to multitask. And what if I run over a cat or a dog? Wait a second. What I would tell you to do is, number one, consider going to a dentist. Number two, in the meantime, I realize today's Saturday, so do you know any dentists that are open on Saturday that say, hey, come on down, love to see you today?
I do not.
There may be. I'm just not aware of them. So,
I'm not either.
In the meantime, what I want you to do is I want you to take either extra virgin olive oil or coconut oil, or my other favorite would be just plain Jane sesame seed oil. Okay. And if you'll just keep dipping your finger into the oil, I mean, as long as it's your finger in your mouth, that's fine, right?
Correct.
Would you let a stranger on the street dip their finger? Never mind, scratch that topic. But if you'll rub and massage that area, what you're doing is you're greatly increasing blood flow and circulation. And that's very, very advantageous to what you want. But it, just in case you do have some type of a, can I just say infection in general terms? One thing that you might do is you just might go get some calcium bentonite clay or just bentonite clay. If it says food grade bentonite clay, even better. But you can actually make like a little ball of mud and just pack it over the tooth and see if it just starts pulling all that pain out of it.
Can you get that at the big box store at Walmart?
It'd probably be Drug Emporium or natural grocery if you're in the Tyler area. Number next, you could try just putting a, and I realize this is pretty potent stuff, so if I, now I'm in Jacksonville. Is this south of where you are?
Quite a bit, since I'm north of 20.
Well, if you're north of 20, if I hear a far-off distant scream or yell, I realize that this experiment did not go well, and then I'm in big trouble, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
So if you tried a drop of clove oil, just maybe can I say half a drop? But you could put that on your toothbrush and just gently apply to that area because you kind of want that clove oil to kind of wick upwards into the tooth or the jaw or the gum. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I used a little of it in water last night and washed it around my mouth.
Well, what happened? Did it help?
It seemed like it maybe a little bit. Probably, I didn't know how much of it I could use. I didn't know how often.
Well, I don't want to burn your mouth because clove oil is a pretty potent substance, but if you tried to therapy localization or just put it precisely where your problem is, that's probably going to give you the biggest bang for the buck.
Can you do that, like with put it on your little finger and put it up there?
Sure, yeah, you betcha.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken, that's still my father-in-law's favorite formula for deadening teeth before he gives them a shot. He'll put a drop of clove oil on the gums. Why does he grin so much when he grabs a needle and goes towards your mouth? I don't understand that. But that's just the way he is.
It inflicts pain.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I just was curious why he's grinning all of a sudden. But anyway, but you could try those very easily. You could try getting that mouth rinse that's available at the big box store called The Natural Dentist for Healthy Gums. That's an easy one to do. You could try oil pulling.
I did some of that last night, too.
Well, did you find any of these techniques that you tried already gave you relief?
I only did it like one time. I'm guessing maybe I should have done it more.
Now, when you said you slept hard on that side, does that mean your head was on a rock, or was this...
It felt like it was.
It felt okay.
I feel it was jammed up in there.
Did you have bad dreams that night?
Yeah, because I felt like it came loose and somebody was pulling it.
Do you ever have nightmares about the upcoming election? I'm sorry. Let's talk about health. How did I get off on that topic? But if you will, but if you will, try those things. Let me know if you have a good result. I'm rooting for you. But if you still have this issue, strongly consider calling your dentist on Monday morning, bright and early. And let's get this taken care of.
All righty. Well, thank you so much, and
you're welcome.
You always for your information. Greatly appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, and I really hope that helps, buddy.
I do, too. You have a great rest of the weekend.
Thank you. Bye-bye. You, too.
Bye-bye.
It's kind of hard to have a real relaxing weekend when you have a tooth hurting, right? Maybe that was Paul's thorn in the flesh, as he had a bad tooth. The number here is 903-586-5257. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan.
How are you?
Well, I'm blessed.
Good.
Several people that are in my, not immediate family, but extended family that are diabetic. And this one girl just swore up and down that white vegetables like cauliflower and lima beans, butter beans and stuff like that, that diabetics can't eat that stuff?
Well, that's not true. However, I understand where she's coming from, because beans are going to have a lot of starch, and starch easily converts into sugar. So when you start eating, for example, I've got on my list right here, navy beans. I realize that's not butter beans, but it says it has an insulin count of 14. Well, that's a whole lot lower than, you know, a white potato.
Right. Well, on.
A slice of white bread is 52. White rice is 46.
Mm-hmm.
In which the highest occurrence of diabetes anywhere in the world is in the country of India. I think they claim 63% of all the diabetics in the world are found in India. But good, you know what? You know what one of their new strategies is to try to stop that?
No, sir.
They're telling people two things. If you eat something, and this would work for the butter beans also, or lima beans, or did you say another type of bean?
Well, there's limas, butter beans, cauliflower, anything white.
No, you had me at butter beans. I'm completely yours at that point. But what they're doing is they're telling people, go ahead and have potatoes, cook them.
Uh-huh.
But as soon as you cook them, put them immediately in the oven. And what happens? There's a chemical reaction. The sugar and the starch in the potato, it kind of literally welds itself together. I mean, that's just my analogy, but that's, or glues itself together. But you get the gist, don't you?
Yes, sir.
And so what happens is if you cook the baked potato or you bake it in the oven and you put it into the refrigerator while it's still warm, that causes a chemical reaction to take place where you actually weld the sugar together. Now, this may not make sense just yet, but let me finish. If you bring it out the next day, 24 hours later, and you heat the same potato up in the oven, guess what? You only get half the sugar from it. So it's still... That's right. It tastes the same. It fills up your tummy. You feel like you've had sufficient amount, but you only get half the sugar. And the same is true for rice. And the same is true for beans and for... But then again, cauliflower, that's not high in starch.
Right.
If my wife is listening right now, she's not going to like this conversation because she made me a broccoli and cauliflower salad for my supper last night.
Oh, hush. Where do you live?
Well, it's right over by Lake Palestine. If you'll just roll your window down when you're driving by, you'll probably smell... Oh, wait a second. I just gave it away.
I saw a new recipe on the radio yesterday on the Chew.
Yeah.
It's not the radio, it's the television, excuse me.
No, I know what you meant.
It had cauliflower buffalo wing sauce.
Oh, that sounds wickedly good.
Deep fried, I know it sounds simple.
You know what the woman told me Friday morning? She said we were talking about avocados, and she told me what she had for lunch the day before. It was a stuffed avocado. I said, stuffed with what? And I think she said they used this huge monster Haas. Is it a Haas or a Haas avocado? Just the big avocado.
Yeah, the big one.
But they opened the avocado up and they stuffed it with grilled chicken.
Oh, I've done it with tuna fish.
That's the same thing. That's brilliant. But the woman told me there were three of them. They went out to eat at this Mexican food restaurant in Athens, Texas. Not Athens, Greece. I know you were thinking Greece, but it's Athens, Texas.
I know where Athens is, and it ain't in Greece.
Well, that's not the one we're talking about. But she said, the other woman said, that doesn't sound good. Avocado and chicken, a little...
Yes,
she said, oh, my word, that looks so good. I'm going to try that next time. But she just...
fresh celery in that, celery and onion and garlic, and I'll put all the good stuff in there.
But those things you're describing, that would actually reverse diabetes.
I imagine. I would
Can I just make a simple point here? I'm going to ask you a question.
Sure.
If you had a calf, and you said... I'm going to take the calf to the feedlot to fatten it up over the next 4-6 weeks. What do you think they're going to feed it to fatten it up?
Corn.
There you go. Grains. Okay. Even though the grain itself, they may technically call it a starch, but it rapidly converts into sugar. That makes sense, right?
Yes, and it's probably genetically modified.
You mean to increase the sugar content or the starch? Yeah, all that. And that's what we're dealing with. The potatoes that were available from Idaho back in 1927 are not the same potatoes they produce today.
I know it.
When you were a little girl, did y'all ever have chickens?
My granddaddy did.
How big were those chickens when you were little?
Well, they were little chickens.
Yeah, and when I grew up, the chickens that we had were little also.
Uh-huh.
And so if my mama cut up a chicken... How big were those pieces of chicken compared to the pieces of chicken today?
They're just my little finger.
Well, it might as well be. I mean, literally.
Now, wait a minute, Dr. Morgan. I have a feather leg out here. She's not genetically modified in any way, and she's huge.
Well, but then again, that's her gene pool, right?
she's a big chicken.
Yeah, but wouldn't you say that your grandfather, the chickens were probably, for the most part, probably 90% of their diet, they were on their own, right?
Yes.
Which means they had to chase down a June bug or a grasshopper or a cricket.
Yeah.
Which, you know, the last time I checked, I haven't seen many chickens pass up a good juicy cricket. Have you?
Oh, no.
But if chickens are raised in these houses where the feed is just basically corn.
Genetically modified corn.
Yeah. What do you get? You get a chicken on steroids. Yeah. So, yeah, I love this topic of reversing diabetes, but...
Nobody believes me when we tell them, you know, look, you need to stop the sugar. Stop it.
Makes you wonder where they're getting their information, right?
From their doctor.
Well, but then again, I've asked literally thousands of diabetics over the last 27 years, what is it that your doctor has told you to eat? Now, to be fair... I've had a couple of patients come to me recently, and the doctor said, you need to get off all this starch and sugar and start eating salads. And I'm going, I love that advice. Because
Absolutely. Even
what I read earlier, leafy green vegetables, they don't cause... I mean, literally, just almost any human being would lose weight if they ate more salads.
Absolutely.
Yes.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
That's it. Ah, yes.
But no, I really wouldn't. I'm not going to tell you that cauliflower is bad for a diabetic. I wouldn't say that. I actually think cauliflower has really good health promoting properties. It's full of sulfur.
Uh-huh.
You know, sulfur is very useful for getting oxygen to all the cells of the body. And wouldn't you say that's kind of a deal breaker? Let's just say there's a person that has severe asthma. Are they going to be the most energetic person you've ever seen? No, they're struggling for every breath.
Uh-huh.
So, cauliflower is a great food.
Mm. Well, you just made my day.
Well, you made my day. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Morgan.
I hope you have a good day. Thanks for your call, man. Bye-bye.
Thank you, darling.
Bye-bye. Darling, I think I like that. The number is 903-586-5257. If you want to call me and ask a question, please feel free to do so. I have a phone line open. And good morning. Thanks for calling. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I 3 years ago this October, I started on the lemon and water every morning. Drinking. I started out with a whole lemon, and I dropped down to half a lemon because I only weigh about 118 pounds. And yeah.
Well, you're a petite girl, aren't you?
Well, I'm tall and skinny. What else can I say? Anyway, I've been doing that. Well, the last several months, and I mean months, my bottom lip has just peeled and peeled and peeled, and it would just burn and hurt. And so my sister said, well, maybe it's the lemon that you're taking. So for several days, I thought it was maybe the lemon getting on my lips when I drank the water, so I would put Vaseline on my lip, and that cleared it for a few days, but then it didn't help.
So, you mean stopping the lemon didn't help, or?
Well, I was continuing to use it, but I was putting Vaseline on my lip when I drank it. So yesterday, I did not take the lemon at all, and my lips just... They were almost normal, and I didn't take any this morning. And so I'm wondering, is that causing my lip to peel?
I can't even tell you how many people I've seen eat pineapple, and their lips become just red and angry, and they start to peel. Well, this is not rocket science, but for some people, if they eat pineapples, it just destroys them. But lemon does have a very powerful oil called limonene. If I'm not mistaken, that's what a lot of furniture polish is made of. So if you were to go to the store and say, you know what, can I get to put on this antique, piece of maple furniture or something?
Right.
Well, it might be lemon oil for all I know. But if you put that lemon oil on your lips, it burn them.
Yeah, it did. But it did so much good for my skin over the rest of my body. I hate to quit using it, but, you know.
Well, you know, the part that I'm thinking about, it comes from the zest. It's not the pith or it's not the inner part of the lemon. The limonene is going to, if you put a wedge of lemon in a glass of water, it's going to come out through the peel. So, well, these lemons you're using, are they organic lemons or just regular?
They're just regular lemon.
Okay. That's another thing that's hard for me to determine, if someone's having a reaction to one of the pesticides or chemicals that's sprayed on them, because I don't know.
Right.
I have a lemon tree.
I also have a lot of ulcers in my mouth, but I eat a lot of tomato and every peach that's on the tree. So I'm wondering if it's not just too much acid or something.
Well, let's get to the important part of this conversation. Where are these peach trees you're just referring to?
Oh, you would never find them. They're way out in the country.
Well, I mean, but if I sent a drone over, could we? Well, and here's what I want you to consider for a second. There's a type of a fat called an essential fatty acid. And the reason why it's essential is your body cannot synthesize it. It cannot manufacture it. But it's, to me, it's so much more common if someone is deficient in essential fatty acids. You'll see their lips peel more easily. They tend to have more ulcerations in their mouth. The fingernails, they tend to peel apart. I'm not saying they necessarily split down the middle, but it's almost like your nails are like layers of shingles, and so
right.
They kind of get weak and peel. But that's what you would see with an essential fatty acid deficiency. And on top of that, during the wintertime, you're definitely going to have some pretty dusty, ashy skin. Is that true?
Mm-hmm. I know not so much about my skin, because I'm pretty good to put lotions and things on that.
What I was going to say is there's an old remedy called lard. It may not be real attractive, but a lot of these newer lotions, I think they're just going back to basics, and they're finding out that lard is so good at healing the skin and the lips. And there are a few chapsticks or tubes of lard that are so good at healing the lips so fast, it's just unbelievable.
Oh,
now,
my goodness.
If you're not taking essential fatty acids, you've got a whole bunch of choices, but I'm kind of old-fashioned this way. I would have to say that if you want to list superfoods, I mm-hmm. might have to put cod liver oil in the category of a superfood. I don't even know how many different conditions I've seen corrected just by giving the appropriate amount of cod liver oil.
Okay.
So that's an option that you have right there. And plus, it can help stabilize nutrients in the mouth greatly.
Well, now, how would you use that?
You would take it internally. This would be something you'd place in your mouth and then swallow.
Just a teaspoon or whatever
I'm probably a little bit radical. I'd probably might hit closer to a tablespoon if I felt like there was a deficiency. And you know, the thing of it is, you only have to just try that dose for a couple, 3 days, and then give me some feedback. Or you don't have to give me feedback. You can just say, you know what, is there anything that I might point to that might be arbitrary proof or evidence that I'm actually better?
Right.
But that would be a simple thing. But cod liver oil kind of has a bad rap, because the way they used to process this stuff back in the 1920s and 1930s and 40s, yeah, I would agree it was probably about as rancid as possible. And when mm-hmm. people would take it, they'd probably belch it and burp it up, and they'd have a horrible taste. But they actually use clay now as like a light filtering medium to remove impurities, yet they're preserving things like vitamin A and vitamin D and vitamin K, and they're trying to get more nutrients. So if it's good quality fish oil, you shouldn't be burping or belching at all.
Okay.
So you can get it in a gel cap form. Sometimes I think there's an advantage to that, because at the factory, if they seal it in those gelatin capsules, then there's no way it comes in contact with oxygen. I think that really preserves it and kind of seals it in from turning rancid.
Okay. Well,
or you could do what the lady said earlier. You can put your tuna fish on an avocado, and you can get fat that way.
Yeah.
Or
well,
your salmon.
I was going to ask if the food, you know, if there were foods that you could eat.
Well, any time that you eat cold water ocean fish, whether it's haddock or halibut or, you know, Arctic cod, all those things are rich sources of omega-3 fatty acids, and that's kind of what your body needs. So I think I think you and I are in the same boat or the same camp. Let's eat real foods that God has made. So the other things that you can look at that have omega-3s, you ever heard of walnuts?
Oh, yes.
You ever heard of chia seeds?
I have, but I've never used them.
Oh, man, they're fabulous.
Chia seed, okay.
What you should do is you should put chia seeds on a plate, then rub the Vaseline on your lips, then kiss the plate and see how many chia seeds stick to your lips. Your husband would probably like... I know, I'm just joking.
Sounds like a game my grandkids would like.
Well, you know what? If the grandkids were there, they would probably have fun with that.
Yes.
See, I'm like a big kid myself, but my kids do stuff like that all the time. I'm going, okay, they're kids.
Right, right. Okay, well, that answers my question, and I will get the cod liver oil and go with that.
Good deal.
And try. I can't eat tuna fish. I can't.
So that's where you draw the line, right?
Yes.
Okay. I'm gonna respect that.
The cod liver oil and the other fish I can, but I can't go with the tuna fish.
I'm not going to spend any time today worrying about your tuna fish situation because we got a bunch of other stuff you can focus on, right?
Right.
Oh, good. You're so wonderful. Thank you for your call, ma'am.
Thank you. Uh-huh.
Bye-bye.
Have a good day.
You too. I appreciate you. All right. There is a phone line open at 903-586-5257. You know, really, this is very, very easy to do. I mean, I can pretty much, there's no screening of calls. This may be the only radio program in the world that does that. No call screener. But all of them are good. Good morning, and welcome to the program.
Good morning. I have a quick question for
you. Sure.
Would kefir water be harmful for someone who is pre-diabetic, borderline diabetic?
Well, one of the main reasons that people have diabetes is because they just don't have enough good beneficial flora in their gut. See, they know with chickens, the way to make them pack on pounds is to give them antibiotics. And antibiotics kill off the good flora. And so bad germs set up shop in the body when the good ones die off because of antibiotics. But what happens is they create so much inflammation within the gut, it increases insulin and blood sugar levels. And I realize that's the short and sweet synopsis. Might not even make sense. But with the kefir water, you may want to cook it to make sure the sugar's pretty much out of it. And then it'd probably be just fine.
And what do you mean by cook it?
Let it sit a little bit longer.
That's what I was wondering.
I didn't mean cook it. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, right. Just let it brew longer because...
Yeah.
Kefir grains will actually be eating the...
That's it. Sugar. Yeah, yes. You got it. Okay. Yes, good job.
Not a lot of research to help someone with that
question. I know.
I've been searching.
I know. I'm in the same boat on that. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to pretend for just a moment that we have a lot of good research that's going to be found in different areas, like studying the cultures that are found in yogurt or kefir, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I'm going to get my research from. So maybe I'm using artistic license. But then again, I mean, have you ever done an exhaustive literature search on the type of beneficial microbes that are found in sauerkraut?
No.
Well, no, but you have confidence it's good for you, don't you?
Right, okay. Right. Yeah, well, I didn't want to do something that was risky.
No. I can tell you what's risky. If you want to make the diabetes worse, take a statin drug. That's risky.
Yeah.
And that's I covered the research this morning. Mm-hmm. That's risky.
That was wonderful. Yeah. Yes,
anyway.
I've taken a lot of notes. So.
But thank you for your phone call. You made my day.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Yes, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. You're listening to KBJS FM 90.3, Jacksonville, Tyler Longview.